take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Hello and welcome to Nurses Out Loud. I'm your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley. Many of you guys know me as the HHS vaccine nurse whistleblower. My lawsuit is still moving forward in court, guys. It's a very exciting time right now where truth is being revealed and more truth is coming out. And this right here is part two of my interview with Dr. Jennifer Smith, who is a virologist and epidemiologist. And she is also the author of Pandemic in Paradise. She talks about her time working for the Hawaii Department of Health during the COVID pandemic. On the part one, which I highly encourage you to listen to, we get into the science of all of this, right? The masks, the PCR testing, the inflated numbers, the fear, all of this anti-science that, you know, we were trained to follow, right? So much of that we talked about. And it's a really powerful episode to educate you. I wanted to make sure that I took time to unpack all of that. And, you know, with her expertise, you hear me talking about this for almost 2 years now on radio. So it was important that I do that. And so now on this episode, we are going to talk about what she saw working at the Department of Health, what she witnessed, what she had to be a part of. And also, right before I hit record, she said we're on shot number 9. So we are going to talk about that a little bit as well. So thank you, Dr. Smith. Thank you for taking the time to educate our audience.
Yes, Jody, thanks so much for having me back. I know it's a lot to talk about. And as I said before, we're at the 4-year anniversary now, the 4-year mark from the day the pandemic was declared by WHO.
Right. 4 years. Oh my goodness. And we're still seeing people promote the injection, to promote anti-scientific measures. It is unbelievable. I actually returned to the ER. So now I have a firsthand account of what actually is going on and what I'm seeing and how people are dealing with it. But you know what? It's very enlightening and hopeful, because once my patient knows, you know, once I speak up and I'm asking questions and getting them to critically think, they quickly realize that I'm a trusted individual, that they can share what they believe, you know, to be true. And after that happens, you know, they always say to me, oh my gosh, I haven't ever heard anybody in your position talk like this. And I say, because I'm not afraid to speak the truth. And they say, okay, all right, I know what's happening. And I'm like, okay, good. Well, speak the truth alongside me. Keep talking about it, you know? So,
well, that was one thing, you know, working at the Hawaii Department of Health, being there in that position during this time and having the background that I have, you know, I was highly underutilized, but at the same time, when I would feel phone calls from the general public and from clinicians and laboratory staff, it was like, when I would tell them that I have a PhD in virology, you know, immediately I could hear them relax over the phone. It was like, oh, okay, can I ask you questions? Like, can you tell me about this or that? And I was like, sure, no problem. You know, it was like, they knew that they were going to get, you know, information that was backed up by years of experience and education. And so like it could reassure them and calm their fears. And it was like one of the things that I know a lot of people were like scared and confused and upset. But for me, it was like, this was exciting because it was like, finally, I can talk about what I'm passionate about. I can talk about viruses. Let's talk about PCR. Let's talk about immunity. Let's, you know, educate people on all of these things. And it was like every day I was like, yeah, I get to talk about what I enjoy all day long,
Right.
you know, and being able to calm people and reassure them was really, you know, for me where I was sitting, that was really important because, you know, fear is false evidence appearing real. And so, you know, people are not get, and as I would tell people, consider the source. Who's telling you these things? Is it a politician? Is it, you know, someone in the media? Like, what is their background? What do they know about this? You know, so consider the source and what you're hearing and who you're hearing it from. That's really important.
It's so important. And you know, what a blessing you were, really, truly. I feel that God, you know, for those of us that did not follow fear, we did not follow our paycheck, we put people first. I believe he was using us in powerful ways. And all of those hundreds of people that maybe even thousands of people that you talked to and you educated and reassured and got them back into critical thinking, because that's what happens when they promote propaganda. You lose your ability to critically think. And, you know, and reality is not what it seems anymore. And that's how nurses and doctors and all these other people that have, you know, ethical positions, like the media, that's how they were strayed, you know, away from the truth, is because they fell into propaganda. And so, yeah, I think, you know, those people that you talk to, they told other people. So you probably had an impact of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that your truth went forward into this world. So thank you for that. So I'm just going to give you the floor. Like, how do you want to talk about your book? Where do you want to begin? You know, like, what were they using you for? You know, like all of these things.
Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about epidemiology and what we were doing. So I worked in disease investigation branch, a disease outbreak control division. So what does this mean? So we would get reports of nationally notifiable diseases. So there were 72 diseases that are reportable to the state health department and also to the CDC in Atlanta. So whenever someone would test positive for one of these things, we would get assigned to investigate. So what does that mean? Okay, our first job was to find out how this person may have been exposed. So mainly we spent time on foodborne illness. So somebody gets salmonella infection. Okay, so where did you go? What did you eat? So we would interview them. Okay, there are other issues in terms of contact. So we can talk about contact tracing. So this is something that's widely done in epidemiology. So who do you live with? Do you live with anyone who's a food handler? Do you live with anyone who's a caregiver? You know, there are certain restrictions that apply to those people. So, okay, somebody works in a restaurant. Okay, they're going to have to go get tested, make sure they're negative before they can go work out in their restaurant. So the second thing is then we implement prevention and control measures. So again, restrictions from work. If there's, you know, are you on antibiotics? You have to get tested negative before you can return to your normal duties. We would investigate influenza. We would only investigate outbreaks. So mainly schools, care facilities. You know, we had certain definitions that we had to use in terms of what constituted an outbreak. And then again, prevention and control measures. So mainly in care homes, like with the elderly, if there was an outbreak of respiratory illness, what we would do is, you know, were they isolating? Meaning most of those people are in a room with somebody else. Can you remove them from the room? Are they being given Tamiflu? Had they been vaccinated? Restrict visitors. You know, there's certain things that you can do to limit the spread within the care home. Okay, now here's the thing. Pre-pandemic, I had four schools that had influenza outbreaks. This wasn't on the news. Schools weren't shut down. No one was wearing masks. people were still going to work. Everything was business as usual. So these restrictions that suddenly became a big deal with SARS outbreak were never being implemented before with any other respiratory virus. So just a little background about disease investigation. So contact tracing a respiratory virus, I'm just going to say, is kind of impossible. So by the time the virus was detected and we were getting positive cases, you know, containment was never an option. Containment was not an option even once they locked down Wuhan in the early, I believe it was, you know, I have to go back to my memory now, when that was early 2020 when they locked down Wuhan. Millions of people had already fled the city. So this virus had already been seeded throughout the world well before that. So containment was never an option. So this was just sheer folly, as I said, like trying to intervene and stop the spread of something that's submicroscopic and spread by airborne is simple arrogance of humans. It's just it's impossible to do.
Or nefarious in nature, right? Because our government was like, lock down the world. And it's like, really?
So the point of all this, like shutdown, lockdown, was meant to put infrastructure in place because, look, it's like I said, you know, it's like putting a pot of water on slow boil. You turn it down, but once you open things back up, the water's going to boil over. So we knew, like, look, it's a respiratory virus. It's going to spread. These supposed shutdowns and lockdowns were meant to put infrastructure in place to handle a surge in cases. Okay, what does that mean? Now, my friend who's an infectious disease behaviorist tells this, and I think this is really key. Okay, whenever you have an outbreak of something, you know, if you go to Ebola, you go to Africa, they don't send people to hospitals. You don't send these people who are infected with this new illness into the hospital where the sick people are. No, you triage. You set up a triage hospital, field tent outside or in another location, and you separate these people from the people who are normally in the hospital. So this whole idea of sending people to the hospital with this supposed novel respiratory virus just went against everything we ever do for outbreak intervention. So, and one myth I want to dispel very quickly is the idea that this ever was a novel virus. So as a virologist, it's called SARS coronavirus 2 because it is SARS reemerged. This isn't a brand new virus we've never seen before. We've been studying SARS since it first emerged in late 2002, early 2003. There's a body of literature, thousands of publications about SARS. It's not something we didn't know about. It has the same receptor as SARS, the original. It spreads the same way. It causes the same type of illness. This was never a brand new thing we've never seen before. So I just really wanted to dispel that myth right up front.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So what was it? I mean, no, hold on. I want to go back a little bit to talking about the sickness. We were seeing a ton of people test negative for the flu and diagnosing them with respiratory illness or bronchitis or pneumonia back in 2019, November, December, January, February. Tons of people that were already testing negative for the flu. I've heard from tons of people that had their own sickness story. I was one of them. So I knew. And then I also had a nurse that I worked with who said at the nurse's station silently, oh my gosh, I was in Wuhan, 45 minutes outside of Wuhan in December, picking up a patient because she's a flight nurse, right? And she goes, and then the pilot got sick, blah, 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 blah. But I tell that story because at that moment in time, I thought, who are we kidding? We are a society of people that travel all over the world. This outbreak, it did not just come on the scene when we heard about it in Washington or when we heard about it in New York. It was already widespread.
Yep.
So that's a point that I'm glad you brought up. So thank you for that. And thank you for explaining to people how, you know, surveillance and all of that works. So, okay. So we do all this, the pandemic is out. Where are you working? What do they have you do?
Okay. So I'm at the Hawaii Department of Health in Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm in disease investigation branch. There are six of us who work in the disease investigation branch. So we handle disease investigation for the entire island of Oahu. So that's the most populated island in Hawaii. We have what we call outer islands of Kauai, Maui, and the big island or Hawaii. There is at least one disease investigator on each of those islands. So there's at least nine of us for the entire state of Hawaii. So we started, again, we started monitoring travelers in early 2020. What that meant was people would come in from areas of interest. First, it was Wuhan and Hubei, and then that expanded to China and then Southeast Asia. As countries were added, we would have to monitor people who came in from those areas. Now, they actually funneled travelers, repatriated people to the U.S. through seven airports in the United States, and Honolulu was International Airport was one of them. There was a big concern in Hawaii because we're such a small island with very limited medical services, and we already had a doctor shortage in the state of Hawaii. So there was a lot of concern about funneling people through there. And what if we had people who were sick? And so they wanted the military. We have a large military contingent in Hawaii with all branches of the service there. So they wanted them, the military, to handle the isolation and quarantine. Because we just didn't have the capacity there in Hawaii. So knowing what was coming, we had the opportunity in Hawaii to watch what was happening from Asia, which is spread into Italy and through Europe and then to New York. And then, so we had an opportunity watching what was going on throughout the world with this to be able to set up infrastructure. We had a lot of time to set up all this infrastructure to get ready because it was coming. And well, as I said before, it was already there in the islands before we had our first confirmed case. So disease investigation, I believe my first case I was assigned in March of 2020. So this was a nurse. So she had traveled to Vegas. So there was interesting, there were cities that became hotspots suddenly, you know, Boston, and it was Vegas, and it was somewhere in California. So there were hot spots. People were, our first cases were people who were traveled. So people who had been to on a cruise or been to Europe or been on the mainland. And so she was my first case. Now we had her family, all the children. I think there were eight children, all her coworkers. She was a nurse, worked at a local hospital. I had 40 people. Wow. In terms of her, not only her, but all her contacts, her boyfriend who lived with her, traveled with her, never got sick, never tested positive. it was very interesting talking to all these people because I'm like, well, it's not as true. I mean, sleeping in the bed next to her, you know, like, yep. I said, that's how it normally spreads. You're congregating together, you're traveling together, you're together all the time. None of them ever tested positive. None of them ever got sick. You know, but what I had to do was to call and interview her, get all the information for where she had been, who she'd been in contact with, and I have to call all those people, interview all of them. Then they have to quarantine. Then I had to call. Now, early on, quarantine and isolation was very undefined. So, you know, it was until symptoms subside, no fever for at least 48 hours without, you know, anti-fever medications,
yeah.
But there were symptoms that could, you know, a cough lingers. It can linger for weeks after you're sick. So, you know, I'm following this family, and a lot of her family members, the kids especially, couldn't even start quarantining till after she was released from isolation because they all lived together. They all lived in the same house. They were together all the time. So I was following them for a month, at least a month. What's the definition? How do we know when to release these people from isolation? When can they go back to work? When there was so many questions and there were very few answers. And, you know, my coworkers who had a bachelor's degree, they're not clinicians. They don't really understand. They don't know. We had very little guidance from our leadership. We were trying to figure it out every day. It was, the situation was rapidly evolving. We're trying to figure this out, trying to educate them about the testing and what the testing is and what it means. So you can imagine very quickly, you know, get my second case. Here's another 30 people. I'm making like 50 phone calls a day, fielding phone calls from the public, from clinicians. You know, it was just.
As a PhD with your background. That's how they utilized you.
Yes. Yes. Wow. I'm calling people. How do you feel today? Any symptoms? Cough, fever? No. Okay. I'll talk to you tomorrow. You know, that was literally what I was
doing. They could have had one of those bachelor prepared people doing it.
Nurses.
But nurses. Why? That's how they utilized your expertise.
Right. Right. So
did
I
you
was
question that? Were you wondering like, why?
I was considered the subject matter expert and, you know, I was never included in any meetings. I was never included in, they wanted me to write up. So I had to write up the case investigation protocol. I had to write up all the documents. I made case investigation forms, contact tracing forms. You know, I'm the subject matter expert. So they recognized that, but then they never included me in anything. I was never included in any meetings, in any discussion, nothing. And I told my coworkers at one point, I was like, you know, we really should have, you know, in the mornings, we really should have a meeting, a briefing, like what's happening today. So I walked into work one day and we had this, what's called officer of the day, which is the day that I'm the one fielding all the phone calls that come into the division from anywhere. So I walked in and my boss was tells me, okay, you can't tell anyone this, but we have this person who traveled, who returned to Japan and now tested positive, but you can't talk about it. The first phone call was a woman who's like, I saw on the news in Japan, this guy was here and he tested positive. And I'm like, like, I can't say anything. What am I supposed to do? They think I'm not doing my job. Like, you guys got to get ahead of this and have a press conference because everyone already knows, you know? So we were finding out things from, Facebook, from people calling us, from, you know, our leadership wasn't talking to us at all. There was a great lack of communication. So when I said we need to have daily briefings, 3 weeks after they started putting out a daily situation report, they finally started including us in that. So we're the ones on the front line and we're like basically just on our own trying to figure it out, trying to help each other. You know, hey, check out the CDC website. This has changed. That's changed. Like we're trying to help each other navigate this. So at the same time, you know, things start getting more serious. April, spring break comes. They extended spring break for the kids. They decided to basically, you know, kids never went back to school in Hawaii for, I believe, a year and a half. I mean, they were not in school. This causes a whole nother host of problems because in Hawaii, we don't have daycare centers. We don't have preschools. So what happens is the grandparents at home taking care of the kids now. And then where do they get their meals? Most kids in Hawaii get not one, but two meals a day at school. So now what happens? Now there's this food insecurity. Kids aren't getting fed. They're, you know, not everyone, these poor kids don't have computers, Wi-Fi. They go into 7-Eleven to sit by the 7-Eleven to use the Wi-Fi because they don't have, how are they supposed to do online school? You know, I mean, they didn't think any of this through at all when they decided to do this. So we had a weird weekend curfew, which I thought was very odd. I was like, what's happening at night? Is the virus suddenly spreading at night only? Like, it was very odd that they decided to try this curfew. I think it was Easter weekend or something. And I was like, what is the government doing that they don't want us to see? Like, that was my first thought.
Well, and I think that you probably were thinking that because you are their resident expert. So for them not to include you in daily briefings, you know, and give you mundane tasks that, you know, that a nurse could have handled, you know, a person over the phone could have taken this. They could have worked remotely. Yeah. Anybody, right? Once you wrote up, hey, these are the questions that you ask. If they say yes to this, then ask this. Once you wrote that up, they could have given anybody that job to do.
Right. So, at some point, because they shut everything down, we had the public health nurses. So public health nurses finally came online to assist us. So we had one, sometimes two public health nurses helping. So that's what I would do. I was like, okay, you do the well checks and then I'll call and do the new cases and I'll interview them. And then once I get that, you know, I'll pass it on to you to do the well check. So that's kind of what started to be the flow of it, because it came very overwhelming very quickly. Now, in the meantime, we're shut down. Cases are very low. So we got a chance to really catch up. The state epidemiologist said, oh, we're good. You know, we're able to keep up with all the cases. And with the shutdown, it was like contacts dwindled from like 30 to maybe one or two, whoever was in the household. Again, I said, you know, we shifted transmission from public spaces into private homes. So that made it much easier. Our jobs got much easier. So I was like, okay, this is doable. But once you, once you turn that heat back up, things are start to boil over. Okay, so the state of Hawaii got over $2 billion. Okay, so they got $58 million in CARES Act money. So this is the COVID response money, $58 million for contact tracing and testing. Okay, mm-hmm. Now, as I said, there were six of us for the whole island of Oahu, which is over 1 million people. They didn't hire anybody. They didn't train anyone. They didn't hire anyone. They started to relax restrictions, and guess what? Cases started just skyrocketing. Okay, and suddenly it was my fault because I wasn't able to call everyone within 24 hours of being signed. So they asked us, how many cases could you handle? How many new cases could you handle a day? Okay, when I interview somebody and they have one contact or two contacts, great, you know, maybe doable. Okay, I'm still doing all the well checks. I still have all the other cases that I haven't released from isolation or quarantine. Now you add a new case. Now you add another case. Now you add, how many can you do it? We said three. How about five? Okay, so we said, okay, four. We'll land on four new cases a day. Now I call my case. They have 20 contacts.
Right.
So now I'm like, that's just not one case. That's one case plus 20. That's 21 people. Okay. Not times three, you know?
Like, right.
I mean, made 50 phone calls one Saturday. I had to make 50 phone calls. I mean, I couldn't talk anymore. I'm like,
right.
I have a sore throat.
Right, right, exactly.
Maybe I have COVID. You know, we joke really, maybe I have COVID now. I'm going to go sit home for four. Can I get time off? You know, we were working 6-7 days a week. They were started lying to the public. Okay. So, oh, we've got this covered. We've got plenty of staff. We have 93 people. We have 77. We have 63 people. We have 102 people. They kept lying how many people were actually doing case investigation and contact tracing. And we would sit there. My coworkers would look at each other like incredulous. Where are these people? Like, why aren't they helping us? Because we really need help. You know, we have mounds of paper. You know, everything's done by fax in the health field. So mounds of fax, because they had to report immediately if somebody tested positive. So we're getting lab results. I mean, the fax machine's just going nonstop. Lab results and medical records, because we have to review. We have to not only call them, we have to review all the medical records and the laboratory results and then data entry. So the key part of all this is, in order to inform public policy, relied on people like me. Okay. I'm call the person, I interview them. I have to type all of this into the computer. There were over 100 fields that we have to of data that we have to collect for each person. And that has to be put into the computer real time. Now, can you imagine I'm making 50 phone calls? What's the priority?
Yeah.
Make these 50 phone calls, call the five new cases I've been assigned, input the data. Like, what is my priority? Because I'm one person, I can't do it all. They're not hiring anybody else. So there was a lag with the data. There was a lag of the data,
yeah,
and what was being reported to the public. So policymakers were not getting the information in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're making decisions blind, basically. Okay, well, we know now they were just lockstep following everything everybody else was doing all over the world. So it didn't really matter, honestly.
Yeah, it didn't matter. They kept people busy. They kept them busy doing a busy task so that they wouldn't have an opportunity to actually think about what was going on and how nefarious it all was.
Right. I mean, so it got to the point, it was so overwhelming, and we needed help and we weren't getting help. And the state epidemiologist was lying, and they kept turning down the National Guard could get trained and help, you know, no, we're fine. We got this, whatever. So, you know, the senators, the governor, the lieutenant governor, they were all getting very frustrated. Tulsi Gabbard came out at one point and asked for her resignation, and the Department of Health director's resignation. You know, things were just not, something was going on that wasn't jiving. So
finally, I'm gonna pause it there, and we're going to take a break from the sponsors. And when we come back, we'll pick up on that. Guys, check us out on americaoutloud.shop for our family of sponsors with exclusive discounts available to you, the America Out Loud Talk Radio listeners. Also, I want to talk about the app that we have. If you go to your app store and download the America Out Loud Talk Radio app, you will have access to 24/7 programming from our amazing lineup of hosts on a variety of different topics that are aimed to better inform you. You are listening to Nurses Out Loud. I'm your host, Nurse Jody O'Malley. I am speaking to Dr. Jennifer Smith, who is the author of Pandemic in Paradise. It tells her story as a Hawaii Department of Health epidemiologist and virologist. And we will be right back.
It's time and this is
cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
To Nurses Out Loud. I'm picking up on my conversation with Dr. Jennifer Smith. And since time is already dwindling, I can tell you guys that you're going to have another show with her. We're going to have to schedule this one out. But in the meantime, please send your questions, comments, to nurses@americaoutloud.com. And I will make sure to address it on an upcoming episode with Dr. Smith. Okay. Floor is yours.
Okay, so the whistleblowing. So things were escalating. Cases were coming in. We didn't have enough staff to handle it. $58 million. Why weren't they hiring people? Where'd this money go? So I first went to the union. So Hawaii is very highly unionized. So I went to the union and I told them what was going on. They were like, they knew something was awry. You need to go to the media. And I was like, well, you know, I still have to talk to the public. And so I want to talk to people who can affect change. So is there another way? So they set up a closed door meeting with the Senate's Ways and Means Committee, which they hold the purse strings. They have all the money. So let's go talk to them. So they set up a closed door meeting with the Senate committee. I went with my coworker. Their jaw hit the floor when I told them what was going on. They knew something was wrong. They kept asking for the pandemic plan. They kept asking for what the Department of Health needed. They weren't getting information. They were just floored. So I explained to them, you know, what our job was, how many there of us there were, how many cases we were each carrying. I think at that point I had over 40 cases, active cases. Wow. That didn't include all the contacts. We had no support staff. It was chaotic and crazy. So then somehow I got connected with the lieutenant governor. So the lieutenant governor said, okay, told him what was going on, explained to him. Now they did something really silly. They had printed out what's called performance metrics. So it was a list of all of us who were doing disease investigation and how many cases we had done and how many contacts we had connected with up until that point. Okay, so there were 15 people listed, and who, bing, 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 I was the winner. I had the most cases and the most contacts up until that point. So I was the one, you know, really working. And not that my coworkers weren't. They were right there with me working. We worked over 100. My one coworker had over 100 hours of overtime in a week. I mean, it was incredible. The strain was just incredible. So we're carrying all this on our shoulders. No one's talking to us. We couldn't get leadership to talk to us. So this was my only thing. Like, I got to go outside the building now and I got to talk to somebody who can help us. So the lieutenant governor says, okay, thank you. Went to the attorney general. I'm going to get you whistleblower protection. You know, can I share this with the governor? Yes. Okay. So somehow I got connected with Tulsi Gabbard. So state senator for Hawaii, former presidential candidate. So she said, well, I want to have a press conference. Now, I'm a scientist. I don't want to be in front of the camera. And right. I'm a data person. I said, but I can't say no to a sitting congresswoman. You know, what am I supposed to do? Presidential candidate, I can't say no. So I was very nervous. I knew what this meant. I knew that coming forward and putting my face and my name out there was going to have a significant impact. But at the same time, I was like, somebody needs to do something, and it had to be me. Now, given my coworkers weren't going to do it, they were all scared. So I have to be the one to do it. So I conceded. We had a press conference in August of 2020 on the lawn of the federal building. She wanted to send a clear message, you know, contacted, I think, Nancy Pelosi at the time to, you know, we need to investigate, where'd this money go? We need answers. Shortly after this, so early September 2020, the director of the Department of Health announced his retirement. Now, that's an appointed position. I'm pretty sure the governor said, you can either step down or we'll take you out. Yeah. So he retired. The state epidemiologist, they showed up one day with a sheriff and they walked her out the door. They took her off the pandemic response effort, and they had hired someone into the branch chief position, and she stepped up to set up the whole operations for contact tracing. We got National Guard on board. We got more volunteers on board. I mean, it was like, I was nervous. Yeah. Because now I'm like, okay, now I'm being, and I could already see the retaliation start. They were stalking me on Facebook. They were trying to say I was posting things on Facebook that I was posting without permission, which was not true. I was sharing news stories. They gave me a parking ticket in the parking lot, even though I had a permit. It was just little interesting, petty things that were going on. So I knew I was being watched. The day after the state epidemiologist got walked out, they sent a sheriff for me. So a sheriff came to walk me out the building. They alleged that I threatened somebody with a gun.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you know, if you want to make up something about me, try something better. You know, I've never in my life had any interest in weapons, never owned a weapon in my entire life. They just walked me out the door. And as I said, I wasn't surprised. I knew eventually something would come for me. So
out to Tulsi and the lieutenant governor and it was like,
so my first phone call was to the union rep, and I said, yep, they walked me out the door and they said, okay, immediately file a grievance. Now in Hawaii, because it's so highly unionized, the union is very powerful. The union decides who gets elected in Hawaii. Okay, so the union is the go-to because they're the ones with all the power. So I knew that they would be more afraid of the union than anything else. Okay. Call the union, contact lieutenant governor, contact Tulsi Gabbard. You know, hey, what? They're like, what the hell are they doing? Are they this stupid? You know, yes, they are.
Yep, they are. They are. I agree with you. I'll tell you, some of the dumbest people work in the government. And trust me, I'm seeing it fold out with my case now.
Well, the branch chief kept saying you can't. So the reason we couldn't telework, so they were telling all these people out in the community, all these businesses about masking and teleworking and well checks, all this stuff that they were telling businesses out in the community, they were not allowing to be done inside the walls of the Department of Health. The reason we were not allowed to telework was because they found out that me and two of my coworkers went to the union and filed a grievance. So we had a class action grievance against the Department of Health. And that's why they said, well, these people cannot telework. And my branch chief said, that's retaliation. You can't do that. So she said, fine, no one can telework.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. Girl, okay, go ahead. I don't want to stop you.
So I sat at home for 2 months on paid admin leave while they did an investigation. And the first thing I'm going to tell you, the first thing that I was worried about were all my kids. What's going to happen with all my people? All these people in the hospital, all these people I'm contacting, all these people I'm following, are they just the forgotten children now? Like, what's going to happen? You know, and I was like so concerned because I was all these people in the hospital. What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to their family? You know, I'm calling and checking on them at the hospital. And that was my biggest concern, was like, what in the world happens now to all of those people?
Right.
They're just dropped.
Yep.
I told the branch team. I mean, I called her crying and I was like, I was so upset. I was like, this woman, I just spent that morning reading medical records for this patient who was in the hospital and on a ventilator. And I was like, she should have to read all of these records. And they had, this is the shady stuff that was going on. Somebody had made a poster. And it was very divisive. It was like, who's on team state epi and who's on the other team. So if you sign this poster, because they knew that she was going to be taken out, then you were kind of like signing on to her side. And I was like, they should have written the names of all the people who had died on that poster.
Yeah.
Their concern was public perception rather than helping the public. And educating the public. And the whole point of public health is to empower the people to make good decisions for themselves and their family. Okay, that's the whole point of public health. It's not to tell people what to do. And all this stuff from the CDC, I'm sorry, I get very worked up about this because the greatest failure of all this was failure of public health. CDC's job, none of these things coming out of CDC were, there wasn't a law. This was called guidance.
Yep.
Recommendation. Mm-hmm. If you take this information, does it work for you? Now, health doesn't mean the same thing to every person. That's I don't have kids, closing schools didn't bother me, but not being able to go to a job, not being able to buy food, that's a big problem for me. So what's most important for my health is having a job, financial wellness. That's more important than education. I'm already educated. I don't have children. So everyone has a different aspect of health that's important. Health is not just one.
Yep.
infectious disease, health, there's many aspects to health. So I'm sitting at home and I'm like, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen? Well, after a couple months, they allegations unfounded, brought me back to work, took me off case investigations. So again, I asked the lieutenant governor, shouldn't I be on the COVID response committee?
Yeah.
Who knows more about these? I've worked with these viruses.
Yeah.
In animal models. I've studied them. We've tested them in animals, you know, so no, we'll see how things work out with you, whatever. You know, I mean, this sidelining me was very, as again, my spidey senses was up, you know, from early March when the testing came out. And I was like, something really nefarious is going on underneath all this. It's not making sense. If you're going to sit somebody like me on the sidelines, there's a big problem here.
Yeah, a huge problem. Yeah.
And so, you know, they brought me back to work. They ended up putting me on finally telework. So I finally could telework, sitting at home, no case investigation. I was influenza surveillance coordinator. You know, there was no flu. So like, it was, I mean, they're basically paying me to sit at home, so I'll just keep my mouth shut. I'll fly under the radar, collect my paycheck. May 2021, out of the blue, I'd actually taken the day off to take my dog to the vet, get a phone call from the now acting state epidemiologist. They decided to discharge me from my position effective May 28th. Okay.
Wow.
Send me the letter. By this time I had an attorney, call the union, call my attorney, send them the letter. So yeah. Oh, we'll give you an opportunity to mitigate the discharge. If you want to have a meeting, I had no idea at this point. I still have no idea what the reason was for them discharging me. She said, oh, you posted something on social media and you need to take this post down. And I'm like, what post are you talking about? Well, obviously, you know, and now it's on record. I said, obviously, I don't know because I'm asking you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I have no idea. Okay, send me the letter, you know, and they restricted my access. But I don't know what the point was of like saying, okay, in 2 weeks, you're going to be fired.
Right. Right. You know? Well, they did the same thing to me. That at first I was on administrative leave for a couple of weeks. Then I was on investigative leave for like a year. I mean, I'm not kidding you. And it's like, you know, I'd have interview questions. I got investigated. Then they put me on notice leave for like 6 months. And I was like, what's this notice leave? The notice leave was just to be like, something is going to happen. So we're putting you on notice. You just don't know when it's going to happen. And it's like, am I coming back to work? Am I getting fired? Yeah. Well, they wound up firing me because a federal judge is like, what are you doing with her? What are you doing with her? So I hear you. Like, that's all retaliation.
Right.
As soon as they put you on administrative leave, that was retaliation.
The bottom line is I posted on LinkedIn. I posted a post. So we know this was happening all over the country. The people who were supposedly dying from COVID. Now, as I said, is it said COVID anywhere on the death certificate? It was just counted whether they were tested or not. So this child had come to Hawaii and was very ill with other medical conditions. The parents wanted some time with the child before it passed. And the kid came, went to the hospital, they tested CT values, were like, I mean, come on, this is not a positive. Like 38, 39, you know, this is not a positive.
Where are you now? Like, what is going on?
So immediately, obviously, filed a grievance with the union. We went to the pre-discharge meeting. We still got no information. I was supposed to mitigate the discharge for things. I had no idea what policy I violated, what I did wrong. Like, no one ever told me. My attorney was there. He said, you know, firing somebody and not telling them why is a hallmark of a totalitarian regime. We don't do that in America. At least this is still America, at least I think. You know, filed a lawsuit, whistleblower retaliation, First Amendment rights violation, a host of things, defamation, a host of other things. Arbitration, which is the lawsuit's still pending. Okay. Arbitration. I mean, there's three phases to the grievance: phase one, two, and then arbitration. phase one and two, nothing. Still, they say nothing.
Right. Sounds like me.
We knew it was going to end up in arbitration. So it was like, okay, January of last year, finally, oh, they want to make a settlement. Oh, so what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting new leadership. The lieutenant governor is now the governor. We have a new Department of Health director. We have a new state epidemiologist. These people are retiring. We want to just put this behind us and move on. Like, let's just forget it ever happened. You know, meanwhile, my whole life's turned upside down. I have no job. I have to move across an ocean, like leave my community, my home, everything, you know. Nothing, a lot has happened. And
so was Governor Green was the lieutenant governor that you blew the whistle to?
Yes.
And so now he's governor. Oh my God, that man.
So what happened? He was supposed to protect me from this very thing from happening. He said, I have the text messages. I have the emails that say that I will protect you from retaliation. I have all of those documented. I even asked him point blank. Thank you for your protecting me. I have all of this. Where was he through all of this being discharged from my position? And now he's governor.
And look what's happening with that state. Look what happened with Lahaina and the cover up there. I mean, to me, it is the most horrible thing, you know, ushering in this new Green Deal or whatever, blah, 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 blah. I mean, cannot believe how Hawaiians do not understand that if they keep voting for these same.
It doesn't matter. It's not about voting. Let me tell you about voter fraud in Hawaii. Okay. Voter suppression and voter fraud is huge. So that election was bought. I mean, that was such a joke. I voted in the primary. We had the largest gubernatorial field ever in the state of Hawaii. Most of them were Republican governors. The popular candidate doesn't win the primary for Republican. It was ridiculous. They went to all mail-in ballots. They had ballot boxes in parks all over. They weren't secure. They weren't being guarded. There was no cameras on them. You know, for the actual election, neither my husband nor I received a ballot. Neither of us could vote. We never received a ballot in the mail. Voter suppression is real. And that was a rigged election if there ever was a rigged election.
Yep. And he obviously he got, you know, picked, right?
I was told well before the election by people that were like, oh, that's already been paid for. He's already the selected one. So I was told that. And there were a lot of candidates there was one candidate in particular was very, very popular. The people loved him. The Hawaiians loved him.
Who was it?
He didn't even get picked in the primary. Person picked for the Republican candidate had actually run before and lost, and he was not the favorite. He was bottom of the barrel. So he was picked as a Republican candidate because they knew that Green could beat him.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, we're obviously going to have to do another show on the injections and everything else that, you know, Jennifer, I am so blown away by you and your courage. You know, we have just a couple of minutes left here, and I really want to give you the rest of the time to tell us, like, why did you come forward? Why were you not scared? I know you had to make a lot of money working for the state in your position.
No, I didn't.
No.
I was highly underpaid and undervalued. Look, at the end of the day, I was scared. And at the end of the day, you know, I have to be able to look myself in the mirror. But more importantly, this is a spiritual battle like never before. And I knew, I'm going to get emotional. I knew that eventually I would have to stand in front of my Father in heaven. And there was no way I was going to stand there and tell him why I had to say no. There was no way I was ever going to do that. And so, you know, the people deserve better. The people deserve more. And they weren't getting the truth. And, you know, it was worth the sacrifice. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Oh my God, you made me emotional. I tell you, it's the same for me. You know, I tell people all the time, they're like, how did you do this? Why did you do this? And I was like, because I was called to do it. I was called to do it. And there is no way that I am going to stand before God and him ask me, Jody, I was urging you. You knew what I was wanting you to do. Why didn't you do it? And I was going to say, because I didn't trust you to provide for me, Father.
I will tell you this. I will end with this. So I would drive to work. I would drive to parking. I had to park a mile from the building I worked in. And I would have to walk through the park to work. And I was sitting in traffic. All this was happening. And I was sitting in traffic waiting to turn. And I looked over and the library had a little wall in front of it. And on the wall, it said, had a plaque. And it said, you as an individual and I as an individual can make a difference. And that was the sign. I was like, okay.
That was it.
I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah. Well, God bless you. My sister in Christ. Thank you. Thank you so much. And you guys, this is what I talk about. Like, this is not about a religion. This is not about a religion and you being part of a certain type of church. I don't even know what your upbringing is. All I know is that we are going to be separated. We are being separated. The church, which is the people that believe and that have a relationship with God, are being called out in this fight. We are being called. We are being separated. You know, he knows what we're made of, right? He called us by name.
If I could just say this, and I told this group of ladies last night, we are all human. First and foremost, we are all human. Before I'm a woman, before I'm a white woman, before I'm anything else, we are all human. We are all the same. We need to stop with all this division. We all have a common enemy. And that's the thing that we need to start focusing on.
Right.
We are all human. Right. Every single one of us. We are all human.
Yep.
Stop focusing on the division. Stop focusing on gender. Stop focusing on race.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all humans and we all have a common enemy.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And you know what? You know, it is going to be the people that stand in truth and in love and in their faith, that are being led by faith, that you're going to see rise up more and more and more. And you know what? I don't know what's happening with my lawsuit. Jennifer doesn't know what's happening with her lawsuit. And you know what? But we did what we were called to do. And putting our trust in him, right, to lead us and to see how this all unfolds, it is going to be a mighty powerful day. And you know what, whether we reap those rewards while we're here on this earth, we're certainly going to reap them in heaven. So thank you so much, Dr. Smith, for joining me and hearing your story. I am going to have you back on. We're going to talk about what else we're going to shine a light on, because you are in this position for a reason. I'm in this position right now for a reason. And you just confirmed to me. I didn't even know that you were, a follower of Jesus. So, you know, thank you, sister. Thank you all who are listening. Please like, save, review, share this show on whatever platform that you are listening to us on, and send us any questions, comments, or concerns to nurses@americaoutloud.com. And please get Dr. Jennifer Smith's book, Pandemic in Paradise, and check it out and share this with your audience. Share this with the podcasters that you listen to so that they can have her on the show as well. And just keep spreading this message. Until next time, friends, be safe, be well, and God bless.
It's time.